It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
There could be no greater contrast to the beautiful image of a mother holding her infant child than the chilling displays our nation saw in recent days. Lawmakers in New York cheered with delight upon the passage of legislation that would allow a baby to be ripped from the mother's womb moments from birth. These are living, feeling, beautiful babies who will never get the chance to share their love and their dreams with the world. And then we had the case of the governor of Virginia, where he stated he would execute a baby after birth to defend the dignity of every person. I am asking Congress to pass legislation to prohibit the late-term abortion of children who can feel pain in the mother's womb. Let us work together to build a culture that cherishes innocent life. And let us reaffirm a fundamental truth. All children, born and unborn, are made in the holy image of God.
That was an excerpt from the President's speech, the State of the Union address, on Tuesday evening. And I wanted you to hear it again because last night when I was watching Special Report on Fox, barely a mention of the State of the Union, except for criticism. And I just wanted you to remember what he actually said. That was just a portion of it, of the hour and 20-minute speech that he gave. And in response to that, you may remember that, you may remember the camera going to Chuck Schumer. This is the moment when I thought he looked absolutely wicked. He usually just looks strange to me, the word that comes to my mind, I'm not sure I should use, a professor, let's say, sort of crazy, only worse than that, with his glasses. But this was like wicked. And this is at the response to what the president is saying about late-term abortion and letting babies die. This is about what happened in New York. And you see Chuck Schumer just smirking and then turning and sort of making like a little joke to the person next to him. And meanwhile, the women in white, dressed in white, who were so excited about women's rights and that 58% of the new jobs that the president cited, the numbers were populated by women, and they jumped up and they cheered. But when it came to discussions of the lives of babies, they sat still. They did not clap. It was a stunning moment. So I thought you might want to hear what the young girl from New York City had to say, from New York State, the youngest member of the House of Representatives, Ocasio-Cortez. She was in an interview last night, or the day after the speech, and she was asked what she thought about it. This is what she said.
No, I think that the president was unprepared. I don't think that he did his homework. We've seen States of the Union addresses delivered by many presidents, Democrat and Republican. They almost always have substantive policies that are offered, I agree with Senator Klobuchar there, that there was no plan. There was no plan to address our opioid crisis. There was no plan to address the cost of health care. There was no plan to increase wages. It was, you know, I had to ask myself, is this a campaign stop or is this a State of the Union?
Well, first of all, of course, all that's factually incorrect. When it comes to the opioid crisis, we know that 90% of our drugs are coming in through the southern border. So you might be able to fix some of that by building a wall. And then on health care, what do you think is rising, making costs go up in health care? Have you been to an emergency room lately at a hospital? Do you know who's paying for all that care for illegal immigrants coming across the border? I'm not saying that that's the primary reason. I'm just saying that's a big, big part. We're paying for health care for people that are not paying anything into the system. And so, and then when it comes to wages, what do you think's driving wages down? It's cheap labor coming across the southern border. And so, but he was unprepared. But she, on the other hand, was very prepared. And could I just say, ironically, those women dressed in white, mostly the freshmen, oh no, Nancy Pelosi's not exactly freshman, is she? Dressed in white in solidarity with women's rights and in honor of women's suffrage. But here's the irony. Melissa May has written this. Women's suffrage, like black civil rights, was blocked by the Democratic Party. Senator A.A. Sargent, a Republican from California, introduced the 19th Amendment in 1878. That's giving the, by the way, that was to give women the right to vote. Sargent's amendment, also known as the Susan B. Anthony Amendment, was defeated four times by a Democrat-controlled Senate. When the Republican Party regained control of Congress in 1919, the Equal Suffrage Amendment finally passed the House in May and in the Senate in June. When the amendment was submitted to the states, 26 of 36 states ratified it. That ratified it had Republican legislatures. Of the nine states that voted against ratification, eight were Democratic. 12 states, all Republican, had given women full suffrage before the federal amendment was even ratified. So, just a little piece of information, and obviously those freshmen, among all the other things they are ignorant of, they didn't know that, even as they were supposedly celebrating it. I'm guessing Nancy Pelosi doesn't know that either. Van Jones, the communist who finds himself in the White House frequently, he worked on prison reform with Jared Kushner, had this to say about the speech. Let's listen.
I saw this as a psychotically incoherent speech with cookies and dog poop. He tries to put together in the same speech these warm, kind things about humanitarianism and caring about children. At the same time, he is demonizing people who are immigrants in a way that was appalling.
Demonizing child trafficking.
Hold on a second. There were people in that gallery who were children who had been torn away from their mothers at the border. He did not mention them. There were soldiers who were transgender who had been thrown out of the military. He didn't mention them. There are veterans. He's talking about veterans. There are veterans who he has thrown out of this country who are dreamers. He did not mention them. And he didn't say one positive thing. If you want to talk about the people he could have mentioned,
so he's not mentioning is a bad speech.
Listen, if you're going to talk about immigration, you're going to talk about undocumented people. Then talk about the one who drowned saving people in Houston after the storm. Talk about the people who have given their lives for this country.
I believe he did talk about people who had given their lives for this country. I believe he recognized a first responder at the Tree of Life Synagogue. I believe he recognized more than one, maybe four, it seems to me, World War II veterans who had sacrificed not their lives, but had made great sacrifices to serve us on D-Day. He talked about the sacrifices. He recognized Buzz Aldrin, one of the first men on the moon who's still living 50 years later. He recognized all kinds of people, but Van Jones was upset because he didn't recognize transgender soldiers who had lost their positions. So that's where we are in this country. You know, the president's remarks on socialism were powerful, and you noticed that the same thing the Democrats said. While President Trump said we would never be a socialist country, they said they did not applaud. I mean, that's stunning. And by contrast, let me mention to you, I've not talked about Bolsonaro, who's the new president of Brazil. He is a real strong conservative. He is an admirer of President Trump. That's I really would rather not lead with that. My understanding, he's just very conservative, loves his people. And guess what he's doing? They're going through the schools to revise textbooks to excise references to feminism, homosexuality, and violence against women. One of the goals to get Brazil out of the worst positions in international education rankings is to combat the Marxist rubbish that has spread in educational institutions. That's what Bolsonaro tweeted on the eve of his inauguration. So isn't that something? And that's probably, if we could, that's probably what we need to do in this country, is purge our textbooks, purge our professors, all of those people who are teaching Marxism and socialism to our children and moral depravity. They're brainwashing them. It's a concerted effort to shut out any kind of a contradiction or any other viewpoint to force. This is what totalitarian societies do. This is what totalitarian educators do, because they have a political agenda, and it is not the educating of your children and mine. Oh, goodness, where could I go with this next conversation? You know, Virginia is in big trouble. I was going to play Garrett Tenney's piece, but I think I just need to tell you that we had the governor, of course, appearing in blackface. Well, he said it was him, and then he said it wasn't him, so we're not quite sure. But he's appearing, someone on his particular page in his yearbook, at which people are saying now he was the one who would have hand-chosen the pictures on his page. It shows a man in blackface and then a guy in a Ku Klux Klan costume next to him. And so the governor of Virginia is having to apologize. He's refusing to step down. There's talk of him switching to independent so that he can save his position. But everyone pretty much is asking him to step down. But then we hear that the second in command, I'm trying to do this from memory, sorry, the name's the second in command, I'll think of it in just a second, has been, of course, accused of sexual assault now. And the person accusing him is Fairfax, yes, Governor or Lieutenant Governor Fairfax. He's been accused of sexual assault by a very reliable source. The Washington Post knew about this during the campaign. They refused to print the story. They said it was, well, they couldn't verify it. I remember they were really quick to print that story about Judge Moore and all of these allegations that happened 30, 35 years ago that they couldn't verify either, but they were quick to publish it. That's what started the demise of Judge Moore. And by the way, our show tomorrow, we'll be talking about what happened in Alabama and the Birmingham Project, so you'll want to stay tuned. So, but the Washington Post couldn't see fit to print the charges against Fairfax before the election. So now that Governor Northam is in trouble for blackface, and then Fairfax was in line to take his place. There were already discussions about Northam resigning and Fairfax taking the oath of office. Then suddenly we hear that Fairfax has this accusation against him, and the Washington Post quickly ran the story and said, oh, no, here it is, and no, it wasn't that we didn't think it was credible. I don't know what their excuse was for not running the story. And then now we find out that the third official, Mark Herring, who was the attorney general of Virginia, now is acknowledged that he also wore blackface at a party as an undergraduate. And so I don't think any photos have been issued about that, but I think he's trying to get ahead of it. He appeared before the Black Caucus at the Virginia State Capitol. The report is that he cried and they cried. You know, it's the, you know what it is. And so now he's the third in command. He would be the one taking the governor's office if he could survive his blackface moment. You might remember that Mark Herring is the attorney general that right before he was elected or after he was elected, not sure with the timing on that, he announced that he would not enforce Virginia's law banning same-sex marriage. It was very traumatic at the time because Virginia has been was a very red state, moved to purple, and now has been really almost solidly blue. The next person in line is the Republican, and he is the Speaker of the House. He won by the race was so close in Virginia between Republicans and Democrats in the House of Delegates that they had to actually cast lots to decide who would be have the majority, Republicans or Democrats. The Republicans prevailed by this one vote, and now their guy, the last in command there, whose name is not in front of me here, is the heir apparent if all of the dominoes should fall. You can't make this stuff up. Is this Haman's noose or what? The Me Too movement and accusing everyone of racism is coming back to bite the Democrats. It's just amazing. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, our June tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon is almost full, and September will be full before long. So if you want to go with us on one of these spiritual heritage tours in June or September, please check out the information now at spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com. You know, one of the places we go is the Arlington National Cemetery. We usually do that on Friday morning, and that is just a majestic place. It's hallowed grounds for us as Americans. It's there we'll see the changing of the guard at the tomb of the unknown soldier. That's just one of the places we see on one of the days we are in Washington, D.C. If you want more information on the Spiritual Heritage Tours, go to spiritualheritagetours.com.
Krishna was trapped in the darkest parts of Mumbai, India's red light district.
Every day, this man would bring men over, and my mom and these men would disappear.
Children should never be this vulnerable. They need to be rescued.
My mom knew I wasn't safe.
They aren't safe, but they can be. American Family Radio and India Partners are teaming up again this year to sustain and grow the ministry of safe houses for children who are rescued from the red light districts of Mumbai. For every $7.08, you provide a day of safety, rescue, and care. That's full room and board, counseling, and sharing the love of Jesus. So how many days of safety can you provide? $212 will keep a child safe for a month. Operators can take your gift now when you call 877-616-2396. Our goal for today is to provide 1,000 days of safety. 877-616-2396. Or give online at afr.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
President Trump delivered a stirring defense of the unborn and the newborn during his State of the Union address. The president called out New York lawmakers who passed a law allowing mothers to abort their babies in the birth canal. The president called on Congress to pass legislation to prohibit late-term abortions to defend the dignity of every person. He urged Americans to reaffirm a fundamental truth that all children, born and unborn, are made in the image of God. The Democrats on national television refused to stand in agreement that newborn children deserve the right to live. They sat stone-faced in their seats. A few days ago, I caused a bit of an uproar when I said on Fox News at night there was an evil in the Democrat Party. After what I saw last night, I absolutely stand by those words. For more conservative news and commentary, visit ToddStearns.com.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
You know, I want to follow up on that. I'll be a little clearer. I was not expecting to deliver all those details to you because I had a report we were going to play. So I was stumbling for the names, and I want to be real clear about this. The governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, of course, has been, it's been revealed that he was, all right, this is just amazing. That wasn't me in blackface, or that was me. And then that wasn't me. I have appeared in blackface before, but I don't think it was that picture. And that was his defense. And so he's been accused of appearing in blackface. He's admitted that he has. He also, of course, embraces infanticide, as he so carefully detailed in a radio interview that we played earlier this week. Meanwhile, the lieutenant governor of Virginia, Fairfax, has been accused of sexual assault by Vanessa Tyson, who's a professor out on the West Coast at the Democratic Convention. And she goes into great detail about that. So he's accused of that. He has hired Brett Kavanaugh's legal team. Brett Kavanaugh's legal team. Remember Brett Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court nominee, to defend him. So Fairfax is in trouble. We know that he's in real trouble. Meanwhile, Mark Herring, now after calling immediately for Ralph Northam's resignation for the sin of appearing in blackface, now is admitting that he too, appeared in blackface when he was in college. He was imitating a rapper. And so now he's appeared before the Black Caucus begging for forgiveness and crying, and that's the way that went down. And then, of course, Kirk Cox is the heir apparent, and he is the Republican in this group. He won by, again, one by simply pulling something out of a hat. It was a very, very unusual proceeding after the 2018 elections, when the Republicans and the Democrats had equal numbers of representation in the House of Delegates, and they had to cast a lot to see which side would have the majority status in the House of Delegates, and they won, and that Kirk Cox became the leader because of that. So he's the last one, and isn't it going to be interesting to see if these guys step aside? You know, if indeed they do step aside, and I don't think they will. I think there's no way they will. They'll figure something out to spare one of them so that the Republican does not take over in the state of Virginia. And one other sidebar on this story, in regard to Fairfax, the National Organization for Women is now after Justin Fairfax to step down. Now, that's pretty radical. I don't think they've ever, generally speaking, and trust me, I know, I used to debate them all the time when I was president of Concerned Women for America, they really did not care. The only thing they cared about was abortion. That's, I mean, whatever, no matter what, they didn't care what happened to women. They were silent during the Bill Clinton scandals, but they cared very much about abortion. That trumped everything. And so it's interesting that they're speaking out and asking for Justin Fairfax to step down. That's going to be trouble for him, no question about it. This is a dilemma for Democrats, you know, is it to which get the preference of the Black Democrats in there that they're trying to please, or the abortion rights of Black and white women and the women's movement? And how is the Me Too movement going to play in there too? So who trumps who? I don't know. When you've got so many factions and you're not really thinking about what's right and wrong, but you're thinking about preferences and money and campaigning and all of that, you know, life gets pretty, pretty confusing. Interesting to me, I want to play one more clip to you, for you, that I find very interesting. On The View, Joy Behar, now we've discovered, has her own little past in this. Let's listen. Clip four.
In the New York Times, they had an op-ed piece in praise of naturally curly hair. They say that it's making a comeback.
When did you leave? I've always had curly hair.
That is
y'all
a feminist
late.
Statement.
Huh?
What are you...
is that you, Joy?
Oh, you know, this picture.
Oh, Joy, is that you?
Yes. Joy, that is you?
Yes. Oh, Joy, are you Black?
No, I know. I was so cute.
Joy.
How cute I was.
Are you my auntie, Joy?
No. That is me.
My word. What year is the circle?
I was 29. It was a Halloween party. I went as a beautiful African woman.
Oh, yes, you ain't Black.
But that's my hair. That's my hair.
That, you can be, yeah, but it is. So the whole point of
why
is that curly hair
with me
is
now?
Coming back?
That is me.
Did you have tanning lotion on, Joy?
A little, I had makeup that was a little bit darker than my skin.
Uh-huh.
It's going to fix it.
But that's my actual hair.
I love it, though.
You know, the thing that really strikes you about this, that was Joy Behar again in The View, in case you missed it. I don't watch that. I can't stand it, to be honest with you. When I go to the gym and I see people have it on, I think I have to just keep my mouth shut because I don't want to be unkind. It's like, why are you watching this nonsense? Why do you fill your mind with nothing? I guess it's like me reading People magazine when I fly. I do that sometimes. I always call it my brain candy to get me out of the serious stuff. But at least People magazine, even though they have a very definite leftist bias, it's not like the National Enquirer or other magazines. At least you pretty much are hearing the facts. But on The View, they just spill a little bit of that. It's so much nonsense, unfiltered by women who are really very uninformed. But anyway, I'm sorry, got off track. But the thing that I don't understand is how many of you, let me see your hands, have, you know, spent your youth, those of you that are white, dressing in blackface? Or those of you that are Black, how many of you spent your youth, you know, dressing in whiteface? I mean, what is this all about? What is the fascination by leftists? And it is leftists. From my perspective, I've never heard of such an epidemic of wearing blackface. I just don't understand that. Is that something everybody did? I find that really hard to believe. And let me just clarify a couple of things, at least from my viewpoint. I don't really think there's anything wrong with putting on blackface and doing the moonwalk in some kind of a talent show or a fraternity event where you're imitating Michael Jackson. I don't have a problem with that. Or even a Mark Herring in blackface, you know, imitating a rapper. I don't understand why that's wrong. It's not any different than Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night Live, who he had a white character, which was hilarious. He dressed up like a white man and he, you know, over-exaggerated the uptight, you know, the stereotypical white male. And it was hilarious. I really don't see the problem in that. I'll tell you what I do see a problem with, though. I do see a problem with dressing in blackface, appearing with someone with a Ku Klux Klan garb on, which is what Ralph Northam did, or at least he did and then he didn't, and then we don't know if he really did or not, but it's on his face, his particular page in his yearbook. That's really very different. But I still don't understand the fascination by the left of, you know, wanting to dress up like a black person. Why? I mean, that's fun. I could see, you know, in certain circumstances, I would have imitated Diana Ross, you know, because I loved her. I loved her out. I loved her costumes and I loved her presentation. So I could see me doing that. But I don't understand the fascination with that. Maybe you all do. I just don't. And then, of course, we've got Rachel Dolezal. Remember Rachel, who not only just dressed up, but she actually fabricated her whole life so that she was black and not white, curled her hair, you know, did all kinds of things, and then presented herself as a black woman. And actually, what was it with the NAACP that she was with? I mean, it's really an amazing story. And then you've got in presidential politics, you've got the likes of Elizabeth Warren, who wants to be an Indian. In fact, Peter Ducey has a report on this. Let's listen to that, and then I want to make an additional comment on this. Peter Ducey.
Today, Elizabeth Warren isn't campaigning. She's apologizing.
It is about an apology from the heart.
She's saying sorry for something she wrote in 1986 while registering for the State Bar of Texas, that her race is American Indian.
This was about 30 years ago, and I am not a tribal citizen.
That contrite tone is quite a contrast from 4 months ago when a defiant Warren released DNA test results.
The facts suggest that you absolutely have a Native American ancestor in your pedigree.
The test revealed as little as 1/1024th Native American blood, but no amount of blood determines a person's tribe.
I should have been more mindful of the distinction with tribal citizenship and tribal sovereignty.
So, why claim to be an American Indian in the first place? The Cherokee Nation pointed us to this recent op-ed by their Secretary of State, Chuck Hoskin Jr., explaining, quote, "Every day people make claims of Native heritage and Cherokee ancestry across the country to take advantage of laws intended to level the playing field for Indian country." Warren insists she didn't lie to get ahead.
Nothing about my background ever had anything to do with any job I got in any place.
The president of the Navajo Nation tells Fox, Warren appears eager to be an advocate for American Indians.
I think it just set the tone for what she wants to do with Indian country and helping out the indigenous people throughout the United States.
In the last week, Elizabeth Warren has offered apologies to the Cherokee Nation and to voters, which means that in the last day, she has not been able to offer a rebuttal to the 2020 platform that the president she hopes to unseat, Donald Trump, laid out for more than an hour last night.
Of course, the real crime here for Elizabeth Warren is that when you claim minority status, that you're black, you're Hispanic, you are Indian, you get certain benefits, especially, I think, maybe more so, I'm not sure about this, but I know, look, I'm Cherokee Indian. Yes, I am. I really am. Much more than Elizabeth Warren. You know, I know because of, just because my radar's up about that, this is something I would never pursue and never have. But there are benefits to having that Native blood in your past, because you get certain benefits and preference in terms of hiring, all of that. And so that's what's so insidious. And as a matter of fact, Rona McDaniel, who's the chairman of the Republican National Committee, has sent a letter to the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel in Austin, Texas, asking for Elizabeth Warren to be disciplined for because she lied on her when she applied for a Texas bar registration card. She lied and said that she was a Cherokee Indian Native American. And so that's a lie, and that is absolutely falsifying information on an application like that. The bar has pretty high codes. I mean, you might not believe it because of your experience and your knowledge about how attorneys operate, but on paper, they are supposed to be truth tellers, and these kinds of infractions are very serious. And so Rona's asking that Elizabeth Warren lose her law license on account of her fabrication. And so that's the seriousness of that. And then, of course, I just was thinking, you know, along with this theme, you've got Beto O'Rourke. I mean, this Elizabeth wants to run for president, and so she's pretending like she's an Indian. What, she's 1,024th Cherokee, and she's using that to tout her minority status. And by the way, she's worth about $11 million. She's the one, you know, who goes after corporate wealth and the rich and all of this, but she's very wealthy. I mean, it just goes on and on, the hypocrisy. And so then you've got Beto O'Rourke, who wants to run. He's considering running for president. I think he'd be a formidable candidate, by the way, but Beto's a fake Hispanic. He's fake. He's not as, what is his name? I can't remember right now. It's like, I don't know, John Smith. I don't know. He's got a very Anglo name. He's Irish. And so, in fact, I remember when he was running against Ted Cruz that when Beto was in the Texas legislature early on, he tried to get into the Hispanic caucus, and he was refused entrance because they said he wasn't Spanish. You're not Spanish. You can't be in this caucus. And yet, so then he switches his name to Beto, and the rest is history. And so people think that he's Hispanic. What is it with the left? What is it with them that they so easily, what is this about not really knowing who you are and kind of living within your own skin and wanting to be something you're not or pretending to be or playing with that? I just think it's pretty interesting. And so there's a couple of other pieces of information I want to share with you. Then I want to open the phone lines. And these are important because this morning there's a hearing. Naomi Rao is a person you may or may not have heard of. I haven't seen this much in the national news, but this is a big story. She has been nominated by President Trump to take Brett Kavanaugh's place in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals is one of the most important courts in the nation. It hears cases that come out of government. So it settles in disputes that affect all of us. Because it's like disputes between the Congress and the executive branches and that kind of the judiciary. It's very complicated. But the judges that sit on that court often make their way to the Supreme Court. In fact, Clarence Thomas is one of those. And, of course, Judge Kavanaugh, and there are others. So those are just two of the D.C. court judges that have wound up on the Supreme Court. Now, Naomi Rao has been nominated to take Judge Kavanaugh's place. She is an Indian American. She's the first to reach the position that she's reached. She has been serving under President Trump for the last 18 months. You may have heard, but you might not quite get, that the administration under Trump has gone through the regulations and just done a phenomenal job of taking away those Obama regulations that were killing businesses and other people, farmers, all kinds of with regulations that were treated like laws and people were punished. And so Naomi Rao has been overseeing all that. She has been so effective. So now she is the appointee and they're coming after her with a vengeance. This is kind of an inside DC story, but it has repercussions for all of us because they are afraid that Naomi Rao may be appointed eventually into the Supreme Court if something should happen to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That's the most immediate possibility. And so they're accusing her of all kinds of things. One thing is that, I wish I could say it quickly, something she said about dwarfs, dwarf tossing, something she wrote when she was in college, is that she's anti-dwarf. I'm not kidding, really and truly. And she said something about rape. She said that women rapists must be punished, but women could reduce their chances if they avoided drinking excessively and putting themselves at the mercy of predators, and she is being slammed for that. Those are the two things. She's anti-dwarf, and she's pro-date rape. You see how this plays out. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
And no creature is hidden from his sight, but all are naked and exposed to the eyes of him to whom we must give an account. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The Office of Director of National Intelligence released its annual Worldwide Threat Assessment. The assessment revealed, despite years of counterterrorism pressure, Al-Qaeda's senior leaders remain active and in command of a widespread network. It also revealed Al-Qaeda's senior leaders spent the last few years orchestrating their terrorist network from Iran, the same place billions in cash was sent to via an unmarked plane by the previous administration. Isn't this something the American people should know? The lack of media curiosity on this issue is astounding.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This generation is different. Everything is smartphoney. Everything is appy. You know, it's all about the quick access to information and short attention spans and all the rest. But it seems to me that another way that we can have a very big impact on our culture is to outthink the culture. You cannot be a good thinker as a Christian. And is this not a command of God that we are to love the Lord with all of our mind and not just our heart, soul, and strength? Join me for Janet Mefford Live, weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
Exposing Washington reveals the deception that plagues our nation's capital.
The mainstream media refuses to tell the truth of what's really happening.
Exposing Washington brings clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C.
The American people must stay informed on what our government is doing.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman brings you the inside scoop of what's happening at our nation's capital.
We must take our country back.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Americans are increasingly leaning towards socialism as an acceptable worldview, but it's not. Socialism violates two of God's Ten Commandments. First, it's predicated on the greedy hunger of some people in America for the money of other people in America. This is flagrantly contrary to the Tenth Commandment, which flatly states, "Thou shalt not covet." Greed for other people's money and envy of their success is not a virtue, it is a vice. And socialism involves the involuntary transfer of wealth from some Americans to other Americans. It takes money from one person's pocket only to stuff it in somebody else's pocket. When this happens in an alley, we call it theft. Just because the government does it under color of law does not make it right. It's just a form of legalized plunder.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Tomorrow, thousands of Americans and others from all over the world will be convening with President Trump at the National Prayer Breakfast in Washington. The program will afford opportunities for the participants to engage in fellowship, repentance, renewal, and of course, prayer. My hope is that the plight of persecuted Christians will receive special attention and redress. The numbers afflicted are staggeringly vast. By some estimates, as many as 300 million are being brutally repressed across the planet. Fortunately, President Trump has made clear his own personal commitment to helping those suffering simply because they follow Jesus Christ. In particular, as he demonstrated in his intervention on behalf of Pastor Andrew Brunson in Turkey last year, the Trump administration understands the importance of holding the persecutors accountable and imposing real costs for their crimes against humanity. This is Frank Gaffney. Find out how you can help at SaveThePersecutedChristians.org.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at Sandy@AFR.net. That's Sandy@AFR.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
India Partners is our partner. And of course, as you know, they help get these young children, boys and little girls, out of the red light districts of Mumbai. They are trafficked into sexual activity themselves. A lot of times they're the children of prostitutes. And again, sometimes these little girls even become mothers themselves. I mean, can you imagine? You know, I remember reading Ray Stedman's book, What on Earth's Going to Happen, about the rapture. And I know it depends on your view of the rapture, but his view of the rapture was that things would get so wicked, which is what the scripture says, that it will just be unbelievable and people will not be able to even, woe unto women who are bearing children. It's going to be so bad. And Ray's theory, which makes a great deal of sense to me, is that the Christians will be removed. The Holy Spirit will be removed from earth and men will be left to their own devices. And I think you can get a glimpse of this right now, what it's like in places where the Holy Spirit is not absent anywhere, at least his knowledge, but the absence of the influence. And so Mumbai is one of those places. India Partners takes these kids out, gives them a safe place to stay in a safe house. And they give them food and medical clothing, and they talk to them about who God is and who Jesus is. And it really is redemptive in every way. It's mind, soul, heart, and body. And so if you would like to help, one day of rescue for a child is $7.08, just one day. Our goal today is 1,000 days. 1,000 days for children to be rescued out of these red light districts. So if you'd like to help us do that and help us to help India Partners, you can call 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, or go to AFR.net, AFR.net. And by the way, just want to remind you, at 10 o'clock this morning in Richmond at the Capitol, there's going to be a march, Commonwealth for Life March. It's going to start at 10 o'clock, and I just really encourage those of you who live nearby in Virginia, because those of you that are far away can't get there now, but many of you could jump in your cars right now, and don't worry about your makeup. Just go and let your body and your presence there indicate the importance that this issue has to you. Many of you ask me often in your email and Facebook, what can I do? What can I do? You know, it's I'd say look for places to be involved where you are, whether it's a local school board, whether it's supporting somebody that you believe is a good person, a righteous person who could be for a local office. Organize your friends. I mean, you have varying differentiations of abilities. One of you, one listener is, has a newsletter that she sends out. Others are just, frustrated because they're trying to talk to neighbors and they're not seeing the fruits of that. Could I just say, it's been my experience, and I've had a lot of it, that if you just steadily drip truth to people, it finally does take. And sometimes it takes a long time. There's no need to argue. You just speak the truth. I mean, sometimes arguments, I've argued my way through a lot of interviews on Fox. I know how to fight with the best of them. But with friends and neighbors, the spouses, I find that the best thing to do is just a steady drip of truth. And truth takes root, and people amazingly often do come around. So anyway, all right, so I'm going to open the phone lines, but I have a couple of things to share. 888-589-8840 is the number, 888-589-8840. Several of you had something to say about the women in white at the speech. Victoria says, fascinating that it's the men that are under attack while women are celebrating their support of mass murder. And then, nice how the Dems look like harpies. It wasn't because of bad lighting, it's their heart showing on their faces. And then Venus says, remember the slogan, we've come a long way, baby. So President Trump acknowledged that the most women ever in Congress. Well, now we have the worst Congress ever. Oh, interesting. And then Stan says, the Democrats look like the Sour Grapes Brigade. And he said, I noticed about halfway through the State of the Union, NBC stopped doing close camera shots of the ladies in white. The visual one was of sullied up angry people. AJ says, the women wearing white. When the president talked about 58% of women taking the new jobs, they cheered and felt empowered. But when President Trump talked about the murder of the babies and the laws passed in New York or Virginia, they sat in silence, almost as if they were saying, I celebrate my power, my accomplishments, and babies are a distraction, a roadblock for me. And AJ says, that's the way I read it. I felt very sad about that. Lots more things to say, but it's going to take me off the track, and I want to get to the phone lines. I appreciate so much you taking your time to write, to email, to join in on Facebook. That's one thing you can do. Get into the Facebook discussion, because we have people there who are not of the same mind as I am, that's for sure. You can engage in some very vigorous discussions, and that's what, making the difference every second. Bloom where you're planted. Bloom where you planted, with your neighbors, your friends, your social circles. Equip yourself, inform yourself, and don't hesitate to get into discussions, but always be respectful and winsome. And remember that the gospel is more important than any political position. I really do avoid arguing with people that I know. I avoid arguing anyway, but I avoid arguing politics with neighbors and friends because my goal is for them to understand who God is and to find new life in Jesus Christ. That's more important to me than winning a political argument. So make sure you have your priorities straight when you get into these discussions. But God can be discovered through sharing truth about other things because our God is the God of all truth. That's also true. So that's a big, thick discussion that I can't get into right now, but hopefully I've given you enough nuggets there. Let's go to Kevin in Virginia. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Sandy. Just regarding the ladies in white, I actually thought I was just looking at a Louis Farrakhan rally. I know it's a little crazy, but that's what I thought about the whole time. But I did want to just mention a couple things in love that you had incorrectly spoken about this morning. One is you'd mentioned that the lady that's accusing Fairfax has hired Brett Kavanaugh's team, but she hasn't. She's hired Ballsy Ford.
No. Fairfax has hired Brett Kavanaugh's team.
Oh, Fairfax has hired Brett Kavanaugh's team.
Yes, that's exactly. Amazing. Yeah, that's what I said.
Well, then I take back my correction.
Okay.
And the other one was I think that the Speaker of the House was elected by a flip of a coin, wasn't he?
Yeah, I just what did I say? Yes.
Drawing straws.
I don't know if it was a coin or drawing a number. I don't know, but does that matter? I don't know if that matters, but the point is the point.
Well, I mean, But I just wanted to thank you for everything you do. I listen to you. I'm amazed at the information you put out, and I'm headed right now to the Capitol for the rally.
Good.
I hope to see thousands of people there.
Kevin, you'll have to let us know how that goes. And listen, I appreciate your corrections. You know that. I've made that clear. I'm a one-man show here, and there are so many details that I can't trip up on the details, and I don't want to do that. I don't ever misrepresent things that are important, but sometimes names and places get confused. But thanks. I appreciate that, Kevin.
I believe you to be the most powerful person on the radio. I really do. I just think you're just amazing, amazing woman of God.
Well, that's very kind of you, Kevin. Thank you. That's a big responsibility if that were even close to being true. Let's go to Lynn in Georgia. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning, Sandy. I want to thank you for being out there, and God bless you. What I wanted to comment on was, I guess it's hypocrisy of the left and the media. I'm wondering how, in the dark of night, President Obama was able to get $150 billion sent to Iran in cash, and the Republicans and President Trump, and God bless him, he's unable to get $5.5 billion by any means, and without all the kickback and trash talk from all the left and the media. But I don't know how Obama came up with $150 billion.
Yes, I get the question, Lynn. And I think the answer is, and you'll get this, the answer is that the government, the federal government, is filled with leftists, left-leaning Democrats who support the Democratic president. It's in the State Department. It's in the military. It's everywhere. And appointees were made during the Obama administration, the Clinton administrations, and they're still there. And so they cover and they expedite, whereas President Trump has had opposition at every single level, not only from Democrats, but from Republicans who hate him. So he has received, it's amazing, honestly, Lynn, that he's been able to accomplish a third of what he's been able to accomplish given the opposition. So that's the quick answer. Let me thank you very much, Lynn. Let's go to Kathy in Ohio. Kathy, as concisely as you can.
Okay, Sandy, I was driving by a high school in one of the Reynoldsburg, Ohio, recently, and plastered on the side of the building said, "Live in the moment." And it just chills went through me. I contacted the school to see very, very calmly and asked if they could describe to me why they thought that would be a good message for our children who are fighting. And it's not a very, it's not an affluent, it's probably middle class neighborhood, kids from broken homes. I said, can you explain to me why you think this would be a good saying, a thought for these kids to think about? And he said to me, well, we just decided it was. Adam H. came to them and talked them into painting this on the side of the building. When I talked to teenagers, I asked them, what does live in the moment mean to you? And they said, it means go for it. And I think that is the wrong message we are sending our children today, and they are defending it. I'm trying to get a hold of Adam H. They won't call me back.
What's Adam H.?
It's a mental health facility. They're all, you know, it's Agenda 21, really, actually. And I just was hoping that maybe somebody from that area, parents, wake up. This is a common core message also that we're telling our kids not to think about the future. You know, what we do in the moment affects our future.
Yeah. Yes,
and
Kathy, absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, you don't have to convince us of that. But let me just get practical here. Could I suggest, I'm just trying to think on my feet here. Why don't you go on our Facebook page and write a post about this and see if other people in Ohio want to come aside you and join in an effort to stop this. You know, if it's in your school, it's not going to be just there. And you could probably use some help. And so I don't know how else to connect you, but Facebook would be a good way to start that. And you're a great example of someone doing something where they live. Because heaven knows there are a billion things happening in our communities that we could have some effect on if we took the time to do it. So God bless you, Kathy. I'm sorry that we can't chat about this longer, but we'll follow up on this. Let's go to Mark in Ohio. Mark, quickly if you can.
Oh, right. Okay.
Mark, you're on the air. All right. We're going to go to Robert in Arkansas. Robert, can you go quickly, please?
Yes, it hurts my head. It's like looking at a guy in between two mirrors, you know? Like they stand for women, but a Tic Tac can be a woman. So I don't get their reasoning. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Artis in Michigan. Hi, Artis.
Hi. I just wanted to make a point. I think this Ralph Northam situation is even worse than you presented it, because he originally acknowledged that he was in that photo, but he would not say which person he was. And I think he may very well be the one in the Ku Klux Klan costume, and he just did not want to admit that. So he said he didn't know which one he was, which I'm sure he did know. And then he turned around and lied and said that he didn't think he was either one, and that he didn't post the picture or put that in the yearbook when someone else came out and said, yes, they picked their own pictures for that yearbook. So I think he's being even more deceptive than you originally stated.
Yeah. Well, if I understated it, forgive me. I didn't mean to, because I think you're right on all those counts, Artis. Thank you. You know, that's the part. The left continually uses the whole racist issue to, and falsely, really. Not always. I'm sure there's racism on the right. Some of it. I'm telling you, I don't see that. And I did see it. I saw a ton of it. I was raised in White County. You probably heard me say that. I don't see that much on the right. I see respect between. I never cease to be amazed as I go out and I see the cordiality and camaraderie between Black and white American citizens. That's the way I see it. I know I'm white, but I don't see this open racism. But boy, oh boy, on the left, the underbelly of this is really quite ugly, and yet they're the ones accusing conservatives of being racist. It really is pretty amazing. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.